the night on mysterious cat feet. Sneaking among the privet hedges of time comes... Yes, guess so. Sneaking on the cat feet, the hours of consciousness time. Oh, it's just, no, I that's a terrible story. I don't want to talk about that. I just, you read about the guy that tried to break up the bank in London, hands a note in to the teller. Yeah, it just came in the news here. Guy went in with a mask and a gun and everything else, and he hands the note in to the teller. The teller started to laugh, thought it was funny, and the next thing you know, the whole bank is laughing like hell. And he got so embarrassed, he just put his gun back in his pocket and says, "All right, for you guys," and he left. Well, it's a hell of a note. But, you know, hey, I'd like to have a progress report here. If anybody out here, any of the art crowd listening tonight, the progress report, we'd like to get find out what's happening. About 3 or 4 months ago, I did a note on the air from Salt Lake City, a 22-year-old British traveler who calls himself a conceptual artist, and it's a quote, says he is halfway through the letter E in a plan to write the word Earth across 5 continents. Gigantic letters. The only way to see my sculpture is just to know it's there and that somebody did it. Simon English of Hertfordshire said he came into the marshes of the Great Salt Lake and piled up rocks and woods to form the middle dot on the middle bar of his E. He's making a gigantic word on 5 continents. It's going to be 5 continents, each one with an enormous letter on it. So if you know, if you're living in Mars and you got a telescope and you adjust the fine tuning adjustment on the telescope, it'll come into focus and it'll say Earth on it. He says, it should know what it is. It's Earth. Wouldn't it be fantastic if we sent a space probe way out someplace to Venus? Or, you know, say to Saturn, which is way the hell out there, you know. Or Pluto, which is even further out in the solar system. And it flies past and it comes on television. You see this great big... the letters on the side says Pluto. What a fantastic thought, you know. and I've often wondered how the idea of naming our Earth came about. Now we're named Earth. Everybody knows we're Earth, but there must have been a time when this place had no name. I mean, it was just a big old. Big old meatball there, flying through the air, and the first, that must have been a fantastic moment. I mean, it must have been the turning point, or at least one of the great turning points in the history of man, because I don't think that the gophers know that it's Earth they're living on. Now, I don't want to make a flat statement. I just said I don't think so. No, I just don't immediately write me a letter that your gopher knows and all the rest of it. There's always somebody who's defending the animals if you say something bad. I don't mean anything bad about animals because they don't know it's Earth that they're living on. I don't mean that. However, at the moment that Og, those two antediluvian archetypes, Og and Charlie, two very, very early men, was so early in the history of mankind that this occurred. Because, you know, the concept of Earth has been found in even the most primitive of tribes. They're living on Earth, and they think of it as a flat dish. Others think of it as a round thing. Others think of it as a wheel. But they all think in terms of a thing that they're on. And it's a finite thing. It does not stretch forever. Do you know that? It would seem pretty obvious, though, when you're... If you didn't know better, and you were very early in man's development, if you're squatting there on a stump and you're fur, you know, you've got fur. You didn't have hair in those days. I mean, your guy doesn't have hair. He has fur. It comes down, and he's got these beetling eyes. He's looking around, and his mind is very faintly beginning to work, and it sees a hazy outline of trees around. Because, see, the eyes didn't work very well in the beginning. You know that. Nothing worked so good. I mean, actually, it wasn't very good. Man, in his evolution, had to be perfected. Do you know that very early in man's evolution, the knees didn't bend very well? they have very early bones, and they couldn't walk. They kind of scrunched along, and his eyes are peering around. How did he see the earth? Did he see it as going forever? Must have gone on forever. Just keep going. You just keep going on and on and on. Maybe that's the way it is really, ultimately. And so that moment when Og climbs out of the antediluvian mud, sits on the shore of that ancient lake. It was gray. They didn't have clouds in those days. They didn't have sky. See, the sky was not yet invented. The sky, as we know it, did not come into being until the late 12th century. But prior to that, the earth was gray. Trees. You know when trees began? Trees began about 500 years before Christ. First trees began to develop. No trees. There had been trees earlier, but of a different type, like ferns, stuff like that. And so this ancient man sitting on this hard soil of baked clay on the shore of the lake looks around and tries to form a concept of what it is. That was an important point. The concept of what it is. What the hell is it about? An important difference. No man prior to that time had ever asked what it's about. What is it? What the hell is all this? They had said other things, but not that. And Og, the great pivotal creature. You couldn't really call him a man yet. They were creatures, the great pivotal creature. Squatting on the shore of the lake. And his friend Charles, or Charlie as they call them, you know, the close acquaintances, came struggling up the shore, carrying an armload of clams. They had been living on clams for millennia. They had discovered many, many thousands of years before that the clam was edible, which was a fantastic discovery, too. Because at first glance, you wouldn't believe it. But they had discovered this. And they were surrounded by great heaps of clam shells, midden heaps, as they are called, to anthropologists and people who study this. So you'd call them garbage heaps. You're leaving your own midden heaps behind, you know. You understand that. You realize vast areas of Jersey are one enormous midden heap. And scientists of 1,000 years are going to have one hell of a great time digging up those junkyards along Route 46, I'll tell you. But that's neither here nor there. And Og looks over at Charlie. And his brow is twisted into the first scene on Earth expression of perplexity. There had been many other expressions seen before that. Anger, irritation, confusion, truculence, the fighting expression, the sex expression. But this is the first time a look of complete perplexity. Og is perplexed. Just the way he saw Clarence or Charlie come up that shore, it was the way Charlie was walking, the way the sky hung over him, that grayness. The way the mist rose off the lake that got him thinking for the first time. He said. Og hunched down on his haunches there for a long moment. 2-3 months went by. Reaction time was very slow in those days. At which point, Og suddenly looked up into the mist and said, Again, the look of perplexity crosses his craggy features, flickers his fur a bit. His great nostrils sniff the wind. Charlie finally answered, which roughly translates, it's not an exact translation I can give you this because their phraseology was a little different in those days. The rough translation is, what the hell did you say? What was that? Og answered and repeated his original statement. at which point Charlie turned and faced him full on, and with a roar of rage went, "Hey, Gargoyle!" Which roughly again translates means, "What kind of you? Some kind of a nut? What are you?" What kind of a nutty thing was that to say? And the nutty thing that Og had said, which thoroughly enraged Charlie, is, "What is it all about? What are we sitting on? Why?" And even to this day, the descendants of Og are still asking that. Man has divided into two vast groups. Those who wonder what it's all about, and the slobs who know what it's all about. Getting to McDonald's and getting another gigantic cheeseburger, tying one on tonight, and trying to pick up a chick in Hackensack. They know what it's about. They know.
They say there's a time in life for everything. For Dubonnet, the time is the four.
Before that's the time to think about some Dubonnet to drink. Before it's the proper time of day to have yourself a Dubonnet.
Some wines are made to go with lunch or dinner, some after. But Dubonnet tastes different because it's made to go before. Before the steak, before whatever you've got cooking. Just pour it over the rocks, add a twist, soda if you like. That's Dubonnet Before, made to make what comes after that much better.
Before, yeah, before.
Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
Yeah, that great mystery of what it's all about has bugged. You don't mind if I salute one of our early ancestors. In fact, it's actually two early ancestors. It's hard to believe that, you know, that the sensitive, questioning, introspective people, you know, such as us, and the slobs come from the same root stock. It's hard to believe that. I mean, have you ever sat in a diner and seen this, you know, this guy with this satin jacket, with the jeans, you know, with the low brow, the hair grows right down to the end of his nose, you know, the guy that's sitting there, squatting there, knocking down a hamburger, eating it with two hands. Have you noticed that so many commercials these days cater to the slob world? Not only cater to him, but they tell him he's the son of the oint. If I can use the type of expression, that, you know, they always use that kind of expression. Have you seen the one where the poor guy is sitting in this joint and someplace that, you know, he's an elegant little man. He's a little thin guy, a little worried looking guy, and he's sitting next to what looks like a gigantic Route 3 Jersey slob, and they're eating hamburgers, and he's got his arm on the poor little guy's plate. Did you see that one? Little guy's trying to guess who is the hero in it. The slob, of course. Oh yeah, many commercials. That reminds me. This is WOR New York, and we got all kinds of goodies here for you tonight in the commercial world. I'll tell you why. I'm not going to do any more commercials right now. So you can relax a minute there. This is our last night on 10:15 shot. For those of you who are listening tonight, beginning Monday night, we are going on at 11:15. The word. So don't tune in next Monday night at 10:15, and you'll hear this solid buzz come out of here. What the hell? What happened to shipping, huh? Yeah, call up the station. Well, I'm going to be on at 11:15. You notice I play a slob well. Oh, yes. I've studied the genus much. The way other people study the snake, anthropology, leaves. I have studied Slobus americanus under a microscope, and I can walk like them, I can talk like them, I can use the phraseology and even the ideas. You know, it's all part of a complex. But we will be on at 11:15 beginning next Monday, right? And the devil take the hindmost. And you know, while we're speaking of various announcements we should make here along that particular line, We have a thing that I've been wanting to mention here. The New Jersey Cultural Council, tomorrow, this is Saturday, this is the New Jersey Cultural Council. Now, I've gotten letters from people saying, isn't that a contradiction in terms? However, the New Jersey Cultural Council is having its annual auction at Bergen Community College on Paramus Road in Paramus, New Jersey. And when does it start? Let's see, auction 70. Anyway, their auction begins at 7:30 p.m. They're going to have their auction at 8:30 p.m. They're going to have their big auction with Edward O'Reilly, the auctioneer associated with the Plaza Art Galleries of New York. A big auction tomorrow night at 8:30 at the Bergen Community College for the benefit of the North Jersey Cultural Council. Now, why I'm talking about this is that I have two things which are being auctioned off there for charity, that is for the New Jersey Cultural Council, and it's very important to me that you listen carefully to this. Now, all you kid types over there who have heard me mention guinea pigs, you perhaps are aware of the fact that Shepherd is a dedicated guinea pig cuckoo. Did you know that, Bill? Oh, yeah, I'm a guinea pig type, and I have guinea pigs, and I dig guinea pigs. I raise guinea pigs. And they're great. I think a guinea pig, among all the world's small animals, grows more on you in a curious, subtle way than any other animal I've ever seen. First of all, a guinea pig is not like a rabbit. Don't confuse them with rabbits. A guinea pig has a specific personality. Every guinea pig I've seen is different from any other guinea pig. They're different. They talk. You know, the guinea pig has a high, fluting whistle that sounds a little bit like a large bird. You've heard it, Jerry. They go, they go, tweet. I can't do it. But they have various, you learn their language. You know, there's a sex call. The guinea pig sex call goes roughly like this. When he sees a chick in the next cage, oh, man, are they something. Now, a guinea pig anger call when he sees another male, for example, is whoop, 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 whoop. That's different. Now, a guinea pig who is demanding lettuce. Now, guinea pigs demand lettuce almost constantly. And they learn that when you open your refrigerator, the moment that refrigerator door is open, he can be 400 feet away. He detects a refrigerator door opening. Instantly, he demands lettuce. He relates the refrigerator to the lettuce. So the minute you open your refrigerator door, he will go, tweet, 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 roughly that way. Now, upon gaining his lettuce and settling down to a lettuce debauch, the guinea pig will settle down and go, quick, 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 quick. That's a happy guinea pig. There are various guinea pig other subtle language variations which you will learn. Now, the reason I'm mentioning all this is that a bona fide son of my guinea pig, Conway Tweedy, and this lady he's been hanging around with, a very sensitive lady named Loretta. These are Peruvian guinea pigs. These are elegant Peruvian guinea pigs. A genuine son of Conway Tweedy is going to be auctioned off tomorrow to any kid who can get his old man down there at the Bergen Community College, 400 Paramus Road in Paramus, New Jersey, at 8:30 p.m. And he's a beauty. You saw him, Jerry. It's a beautiful little tricolored, it's what they call a tricolored Peruvian guinea pig. Elegant. And you're curious as to his name. Shall I give you his name? Ludlow. His name is Ludlow. Named after a character from my novel, In God We Trust, All of Us Pay Cash. Ludlow. And Ludlow will go on the auction block tomorrow at 8:30 for the benefit of the North Jersey Cultural Council. Now, take good care of him. I'll tell you, I'll come out and personally bust your neck, kid, if you mistreat this guinea pig. Beautiful little animal. And he's an authentic, absolutely healthy, beautiful Peruvian tricolor guinea pig. Incidentally, he will also come with a box of food for him. He will come. I sent along a book on how to take care of him. And you'll just have to scratch up a cage for him, and you're in business. Okay? Oh, another thing. One of my line drawings, an original line drawing, is also going on the auction block over there at the New Jersey Cultural Council, Saturday, the 5th of May, at Bergen Community College at 8:30 p.m. So get out there and scratch. And by the way, speaking of quick announcements, I got to get them all out of the way here quickly. We're going to be at A&S, because there have been a lot of people writing. We're going to be at Abraham and Strauss in the book department. When? Hempstead, Long Island. It's going to be at Hempstead Saturday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I will be there in the book department. Okay? Now, let us return to the land of the living. That means commercials. How about it, Bill? Hit the button there. Yeah, give me my juice, RP. I want to fall into this guy here. You don't mind if I sit in with you, Caleb, do you? Yeah. All right, let's go, hey.
Piston engine goes. But the Mazda goes. You can't hear the valves, you can't hear the cam. It's got fewer parts, so there's nothing to jam. No rods or pistons to rub or grind. Just a rotary engine you can really wind. Piston engine goes. But the Mazda goes. So if you're getting tired of costly repair and you want the mechanic out of your hair, do what I did and save some brain. Go out and get yourself the clean machine. Piston engine goes. But the Mazda goes.
Yeah. Get yourself a Mazda. In Westport, Connecticut, your Mazda dealer is Mazda of Westport, logically enough. You like that? That thing changed. Since this is my last 10:30 show, I'm going to bow to public demand here. And not only will I be doing some commercials, let's see, let's do a couple of commercials first, and then we'll bow to public demand. Let's see, we got prosies here. Let's see, where's my prosies spot? Yeah, prosies. Oh, yeah, prosies. Let's see, prosies. It's a big Army-Navy store over on the Jersey side, 121 Main Street in Hackensack. And prosies for men and boys at 35 Ridge Road in North Arlington, and they're giving away a poster, a landlubber poster, it's called. All you got to do is come into Prosies, any one of their two stores, and just say you heard about it. You know, just walk in and say, hey, I heard about the post on WR. They'll give you know, you're Jersey, you got to use the language. They'll give you a poster, and then you can get the hell out. However, it's a great Army Navy store. They have bells, sneakers, work shoes, jeans, the whole bit. You know, everything that all good Army Navy stores. And incidentally, it says, if you're a purchasing agent for a company that supplies work clothes, call Mr. Prosy himself at 201-489-9191. That's Prosy's Army Navy Store, 121 Main Street in Hackensack, and Prosy's for Men and Boys at 35 Ridge Road in North Arlington. Remember, mention WR and get your free landlubber poster. Let's see, we've got Prosy's, Mazda, Dubonnet. How about Valentine, huh?
Hey, guess who was in here yesterday? Wally Stubble. You know, little fella runs a grocery store on the corner. Well, Wally drops in for his regular Valentine beer, and you know what? Seems his amnesia's come back again. Connery says it's bad this time. Real bad. I've forgotten how to make change. Can't seem to remember anything. And I say, Wally, bet it's not as bad as you think, and I'm going to prove it to you. I'm going to describe a familiar object, and you're going to tell me what it is, okay? Now, what's terrifically refreshing, has three rings on the label, and is chock full of purity, body, and flavor. Well, Wally thinks about it a while. Don't tell me, says, I can get this. Finally says, Connor, it's one of two things. Them little packs of yogurts or some kind of bird. And there he was with a bottle of Valentine beer right there in front of him. So I say, Wally, that's close enough. Looks to me like you're coming out of it. Some world, huh? Here. Let me get you another Valentine. On the house.
Hey, could you follow that complicated story? I never can get what the hell he's talking about. Valentine Bock beer is now available. Falstaff Brewing Corporation, St. Louis, Missouri, and other yogurts. Other cities. I don't know. You know, all right. I've been getting all kinds of absolutely... You can't turn down public demand at a certain point. You just got to go with it. And one of the things that there's been a rising public demand is for Shepherd to sing "The Bear Meets the Train." The bear misses the train. The bear missed the train. Have you got it in there, Bill? Okay, don't play it. I'm not going to... I'm not going to... No, I don't know whether why I should do this. You know, I guess I can't take fame. That's what it is. I'm not accustomed to handling prosperity. And the public demand for me to sing The Bear Missed the Train is just getting impossible to deny or ignore. In fact, there was a group of ladies down in front of the station yesterday. Well, I can't exactly say they were ladies. They were about 18 years old. They had these leather skirts on. And all that, there's a lot of stuff going there. And they had a big sign that says, The Bear Missed the Train This Friday or Else, Shepherd. So, please, if you will, please. Yeah, oh, the bear. All together, gang. Now let's sing it. Oh, bring it up, Phil. The bear missed the train. Oh, the bear missed the train. The bear missed the train, and now he's walking. The bear missed the train. Oh, the bear missed the train. The bear missed the train, and now he's walking. All right, sing it up now. Listen carefully.
He's walking near.
Yeah, he's bringing a glass of beer.
The bear missed the train.
The bear missed the train.
The bear missed the train. The bear missed the train.
Little kazoo here.
Here comes the chorus now. The bear missed the train. The bear missed the train. The bear missed the train, and now he's walking. The bear missed the train. Caught a bear, missed the train. Walking around here. Bear missed the train, and now he's walking. He's walking.
Hey, look out, he's walking in your hair, yeah. Thank you, thank you. That clears the air a little bit there. Oh, God. You have no idea how tough that is. It takes great concentration. Enormous range of that piece of music. And, of course, it has religious overtones, too, and you got to approach it right. The great enigma of life is when it's discussing. Bear missed the train. And that bear is every bear. And that bear is all of us. It's every us. And he missed the cosmic train. You mean you didn't get that out of that? Oh, for heaven's sakes, you didn't hear all the words, but just do it again. Well, please, yes, just set it, reset that. You mean you didn't get that? That's what that's about. How can I use the expression? It's a Kierkegaardian in its cosmic approach to the eternal train that all of us are cosmically and eternally missing. It is every bear. Bear missed the train. Now notice that. Bear missed the train. The bear missed the train, and now he's walking. You see, he's bear missed the train. The bear missed the train. The bear missed the train, and now he's walking. The bear missed the train. See the reiteration of the theme. Wagnerian. Bear missed the train, and now he's walking. Now listen to this. He's walking far. Now he's walking near. He's trying everything. He's riding in a car, and he's drinking a glass of beer, just like everybody else. The bear missed the train. The bear missed the train. He's still missing.
The bear missed the train, and now he's walking.
All right, now, you didn't see the Kierkegaardian overtones to that. It's, this is, you know, after all, man, bear, turtle, and chipmunk are all in it together. And the overtones of that are deeply religious. Now, speaking of the religiosity, Bill, if you please, we're not going to put that on again. No, that's all over now, because I don't like to disturb the people on the Friday night and their happy peasant-like pleasures. But it is. You cannot put down Kierkegaard with a snort like that. No way. Now, this is more, in many ways, Kafkaesque, this next piece that we're going to do tonight, again, due to public demand, which is overwhelming in its deluge-like quantity. Do you have it all set in there, please? All right, we've had many, many people write to us and say, would you please explain the curious Kafkaesque quality that you once alluded to very briefly when you did your version, which incidentally was recorded in your high school auditorium. This is a recording of my high school band and chorus doing a well-known piece of music, please. All right, all together now. Now, for those of you who are students of the late Franz Kafka, you recognize that Kafka was always concerned with the eternal enigmatic aspect of life. The blank wall that seems to surround all of us in spite of the moments of illusory illumination. And so the great chase through the fields and the dells of ancient Switzerland, the William Tell Overture. And who was William Tell? Do you know anything about William Tell? Well, to understand the Kafka legend related to the William Tell Overture and the strange, blank, concrete-like, enigmatic face of a man about to split an apple asunder can only be understood by those who, they themselves, have questioned that limp-like quality of the mystery of all time. Whither goest thou? Bring it up, please, if you will. Yes. This also, by the way, happened to be our high school pep song, which adds to the curious nightmare elements to it. I just cannot ignore that totally. Yes. This is a salute to the volleyball team. Occasionally, this is the girls' volleyball team, I might add. Indeed. It's just heartbreaking sometimes in its intensity. But the... Come on, that's enough. I mean, come on. My God. I mean, you can just pursue me far enough. No, I've got my breaking point, like anyone else. Now, I might say, though, that the essence of the heartbreaking quality of the Kafka legend as contained in what you just heard. Again, I must say that Kafka is... some people do relate, and because of the very introspection that they are indulged in, the introspective quality of their own nature, understand only in a hazy way what Kafka was trying to say, as he himself only understood in a hazy way. In other words, it's a communication of hazy concepts, and the fear, of course, that was all part of the world of Kafka, of the metamorphosis we all know. Was incidentally alluded to in the second chorus on that piece of music you just heard. These problems that seem to have an easy handle by which they can be solved only lend themselves often to the aesthetic experience. It's, for example, despair is much easier to describe, to delineate, and even in some cases to evoke. By using more visceral imagery rather than the more precise language of the tongue. Bill, do you have that prepared in there for me? Do you have anything in there ready for me? Hold it there. Just one moment, please. Now here's an example of what I meant by that. I've set it up in there, Bill. Thank you. The third one that I had in there. As we constantly have striven. In fact, the entire what art is about, what life is often about, is a constant attempt to communicate, to delineate feelings, to illuminate dark corners of experience, or even what we call the nega experience, which is a very interesting problem. It's the experience that is not only not experienced, but it's a negative experience. In other words, an experience, the reciprocal of an experience. Now, for example, we all, this is Friday. We accept Friday as Friday. It's Friday. It's Friday, right? Friday. It's a specific day of the week, and it's a specific day of the month, and it's a specific month of the year. It's May. It's a specific year, 1973. And yet, there are many philosophers who will point out to you that everything in nature has its mirror reversed image. It's a Newtonian concept of physics. Every action has a reaction. You follow this. And so the concept of negative matter is becoming more and more important in the world of negaphysics, which is the world of the negative physics of negative beings and entities, really, I suppose you would say. And so there must be a negative Friday. So the reverse of Friday is the nega-Friday. Now, this is a difficult concept, and only through the use of specific techniques can we show you this. We can't actually show you the concept. Can we feel the concept? The concept of the nega-world, or the nega-Friday, the nega-Wednesday. Now, let's assume that you're going with a girl named Marcia. Marcia, Fordham Road. You know good old Marcia. Marcia Bugle Blast. You're going with Marcia Bugle Blast from Fordham Road, right? She walks down the street. You see Marcia. She occupies a certain space, and she occupies it rather well. Good old Marcia. And that Marcia approaches. Now, according to the nega concept of the theorem of matter and nega matter, that there is not only a Marcia that is approaching you, but a nega Marcia, a negative Marcia, a Marcia which lies beyond, above, and in another plane of existence than the Marcia that you're hanging around with and going down to McDonald's with tonight, sitting on the back seat of the Pontiac and trying to make the scene with, right? It's the nega Marcia that is constantly causing the curious jangling of the contact that man should make with the other being. In short, the concept of the nega Marcia meeting the nega Clarence and forming an alliance is not beyond the possibility. And so the sound of this nega music, listen carefully. Mozart being played by an elderly aunt on a slide whistle. This, incidentally, was my Aunt Clara playing a slide whistle, in case you're curious. And this plays the hell out of it. Used to sit in front of her Sears Roebuck record player, playing Mozart, playing a slide whistle. May I fall in with my nose foot? Thank you. That's enough of that. Because it's very negative, and I don't want to haul you down too far. Oh, yes, by the way, we'd like to give you a suggestion to discover Shoetown for thousands of buys on... Oh, you got it in there? Oh, good. Hit it, please.
In the guise of Lionel Marshall, proprietor of Shoetown Stores, is the man with superhuman powers known the world over as Super Shoe. Today we find Lionel in the stockroom of the Shoetown store in Avon, Connecticut.
Oh, Lionel, there you are.
Oh, hi, Lois.
Lionel, is that Super Shoe's cape sticking out from behind your jacket?
Cape? Lois?
I know that Super Shoe just returned from a trip around the world selecting up-to-date famous brand shoes for you to sell at incredibly low Shoetown prices. And to tell you the truth, Lionel, when Super Shoe's not around, you're not around either.
Has Lois discovered Super Shoe's secret? Have you discovered Shoetown?
Yes, discover Shoetown for thousands of buys on famous brand first quality summer footwear. Right now, Shoetown is filled with summer bargains. It says Braggins here. For men and ladies, all Shoe Town price for many dollars less than at other stores. And for the kids, Shoe Town is bursting with sandals, famous brand sneakers, and rugged outdoor wear perfect for camp. All at tremendous savings. Don't forget, the newest Shoe Town is in Freehold, New Jersey. There, did we do that? Yes. You know, I didn't mean really to get so deeply philosophical as we did tonight. I have to apologize for those of you out there who were offended by that. And philosophy often offends me. I mean, when some guy gets up, you know, and he starts to philosophize, like, you know, shall we go to the Dairy Queen or shall we not? That is the question. Is it, or would it be far wiser? Perhaps that's why some of us relate to Hamlet and others don't. This constant holding in your hand the desiccated skull of a past friend and saying, alas, poor Manny, I knew him well. And you have to sometimes, though, approach it as best you can, limpingly, struggling up the vast side of a pyramid of your own making and being. So, you know, what are you going to do? You know, sometimes you got to do it. You just got to push, man. It's like Sisyphus. Oh, there was a... You know about the myth of Sisyphus? Of course you do. Shoving that poor rock up the side of that hill. Oh, my God almighty, that was a bad news scene. He'd get it halfway up and it'd start rolling back down on him again. And then he'd push it again and then it'd roll down. And then he'd get it almost to the top. He's going almost to the top. And then it'd start rolling down again. And he just couldn't stop doing it. Oh, and sometimes makes you wonder, doesn't it? Make a nice show, you know. I think a great half-hour drama. Yeah, I could see it starring Ernest Borgnine as Sisyphus. I mean, you know, the problem with Sisyphus had no talent. That's been Borgnine's problem, too, for years. But he's got one hell of an agent. Now, had Sisyphus got himself a decent agent, he'd have got that rock up there all right. So, you know, you got to learn how to move it, man. You just don't stand down in the bottom and shove, you know. No, you just got to throw your shoulders into it. And I'm sorry if I offended you. Don't forget, Abraham and Strauss tomorrow at 2 o'clock in Hempstead, Long Island. That's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll be there with my rock, trying to push it up the hill. Get a little trouble there. Yeah, lift a little. But, of course, you can sing it if you want to. Yeah, old man river, he just keeps rolling. He just keeps rolling. You know what that's about, don't you? That's pure Carlisle. You know, Carlisle's concept of the Superman, old man river keeps rolling along, don't do nothing, just keeps rolling along, don't say nothing, don't. It's very existentialist in the ultimate sense of the word. It's almost Jean Paul Sartre, if it isn't Gloria Steinem. But bring it up there, please, Manny, please. No, Manny, if you get off the floor, will you? Come on, Manny, stand up. Stand up and say it to him. Holler it.